Well, hey, everyone. We are here for this week's culture segment, and we love doing culture segments because we get to meet and talk to interesting and fun people, people that maybe you don't get the chance to hear from every day. And so this time around is no exception. We have Ted Kluck on the line. Hey, Ted.
Hey, how you doing?
Doing well, although we have had a severe dip in weather here in Colorado, so fall has come. But
well, we live in a perpetual dip in the weather here in Michigan, so no sympathy for me.
I hear you. My family's up in northern Minnesota, so they feel that pain as well. But I keep telling them they need to move here. I don't know why they don't. But
I know. But it's beautiful out there. You guys are lucky.
Beautiful. No humidity. No bugs in the summer. My goodness. So. Well, cool. We are continuing our theme for this week's show, which we are kind of talking about mentorship and discipleship and kind of how we can take the fear out of it and the sting out of it and just the kind of the freakiness out of it, I guess, as we would say. And you have a great example that you have outlined in a book. It's called Dallas and the Spitfire. You co-wrote it with Dallas, the guy that you were discipling. And I love the subtitle is An Old Car, an Ex-Con, and an Unlikely Friendship. And it really does detail kind of where you went in a relationship with a guy that, you know, might not have happened had you not been strategically kind of placed in one another's circumstances. And I just want to start by talking about that. And I guess I will just say, you know, for the sake of time and so everyone's on the same page here, you basically met this guy and decided, rather than sitting around in a coffee shop, I like the way that you made the distinction there, you know, talking over a latte and pouring out emotions, you decided to restore an old car together, a Triumph Spitfire, right?
Yeah, that's correct. You know, the coffee shop is kind of the official meeting place of evangelicals. You know, you go into any Starbucks in the world, and there's probably like six worship guys and three youth pastors and, you know, the other assorted smattering of evangelicals. And not that there's anything wrong with that. I myself am a big coffee shop guy, but I knew pretty early on in our relationship that wasn't going to be a context that worked for us. Not because we couldn't talk necessarily, but because I think we had so much ground to cover, and you know there was so much in his life in particular that I just didn't know about, that we really needed a context that was more comfortable for both of us. And you know, we both had this interest in old cars. He had this incredible talent for, you know, car repair and restoration, and I'd always kind of wanted to do it. So I think the Holy Spirit in his infinite wisdom just brought us together when we needed each other and kind of put this idea in front of us, and we decided to run with it for better or for worse.
Yeah, well, let's talk a little bit about, if you could just summarize a little bit of his story and then talk about how you two were kind of paired up. And really how, what I want to know is how you agreed to start meeting with him, because, you know, it sounds easier the way that you lay it out than I'm guessing it was. And I'm assuming you had some second thoughts about it. So talk to us a little bit about that.
Oh, absolutely. Tons of second thoughts. And the
fourth,
way it happened,
fourth
really.
Fourth and fifth thoughts.
Yeah, and fourth and fifth thoughts, exactly. This guy had about the most opposite, you know, upbringing type experience to mine, as you can imagine. You know, both of his parents, when I met him a couple years ago when he was 20, both of his parents were deceased. He'd been in and out of prison already three times at that point, was a drug addict, a drug dealer. And when we met, he was in a residential program called the Lansing City Rescue Mission, which is where he came to know the Lord. And when I met Dallas and when I heard his story, you know, it's so easy, I think, for those of us who have been in the church our whole lives and have grown up there, we kind of become, sadly, I think, just kind of content with the gospel. We kind of take it for granted, which is a horrible thing to say, but it's true to some degree. But when I met Dallas and when I heard his story, I was overwhelmed, man. I was overwhelmed by the goodness of a Lord who would pursue a guy like this and turn his life around, you know. And that didn't mean that Dallas was then perfect. I mean, he still had a lot of problems. He still had a lot of things he was working through. I think working with him, for me, it uncovered a lot of my own problems. You know, I think it uncovered a lot of my own sin and a lot of the ways that I wasn't trusting the Lord. So all that to say, I really felt like the Holy Spirit brought us together. He ended up showing up at our church a few times and really didn't look the part. You know, I mean, our church is sort of typical suburban Reformed church, you know, khakis and golf shirts on all the guys. And you know, every family has 16 kids, and Dallas just didn't look the part. You know, he's a huge guy with
and this is where this is where Kevin DeYoung pastors, right?
Yeah, this is where Kevin DeYoung pastors.
Okay, yeah.
So
our audience
tattoos
knows him.
From neck to wrist, and you know, it's just an unusual looking guy. And I think, you know, in my writing career, having written about Mike Tyson, having done the stuff with pro football and pro wrestling, and I kind of have a comfort level with unusual people, and I have an attraction even to unusual people and unusual stories. And I think that's really where it all started for us.
Yeah, that's cool. Well, I want to know, because I'm assuming, being the good evangelical that you are, that when you went into this, you thought to yourself, okay, success in this has to look like something. You know, we all have our little arbitrary, you know, goals that we want to meet. And we're like, okay, well, I want to do this right. And I want to, you know, I want this to be successful. What did success look like for you when you began? And did it change from the beginning of the relationship to the end?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I think it's really pathetic for me to talk about what success looked like in the beginning, because it illustrates how ill-equipped for this I was. I mean, I truly just thought it would kind of be the typical URC, you know, discipleship experience, where we would meet at the coffee shop twice a month, and I would ask him how things are going, and he would tell me, and we would pray, and that would be it, you know, and it's shameful to verbalize that, but that's just always how it had looked before. And pretty soon after I got into things with Dallas, when I started to get to know him, when we started to talk, when we started to kick around the idea of working on the car, it became clear to me that he needed a dad sometimes, he needed a brother sometimes, he needed just a buddy sometimes, he needed somebody to push back sometimes. And the scary part for me, and I think where the second and third and fourth thoughts came in, were A, realizing I was ill-equipped for that, but B, realizing that, you know, at least for a season, the Lord had called me to it. And what's it going to look like for me? What's it going to look like for my family? You know, am I going to take every phone call? Am I going to be that available and go all in with someone like that? And it was a scary thing to think about, you know, but I can honestly say in retrospect that, you know, the Holy Spirit was with us every step of the way. And he equipped us, I think, to do what we needed to do in that.
Yeah. And I love how in the book you really do tell the story of what this looked like on a day-to-day level, because he ended up going to Bible college, you know,
right.
It was away for a while, and really a completely countercultural experience for him, I'm sure, kind of a fundamentalist experience up there where they were supposed to be wearing ties and, you know, no drinking, dancing, you know, all of that kind
right.
of stuff. And he had to toe the line there, and it was hard. And you talk about the ins and outs of really having to do, you know, for lack of a better term, some hand-holding through some very difficult mm-hmm. times for him, times of him struggling with anger, with a relationship that he started while he was up there. And mm-hmm. what did you kind of get into this and feel as you were moving along, like, you're almost reliving some of your own heartaches or some of your own frustrations or fears that you had growing up?
Yeah, I think that, but also looking ahead to what it would be like to kind of parent my own boys through college. You know, I have two little boys in the house, 10 and 6, and, you know, it's not too terribly long down the road before they'll be there, and I'll be kind of taking those phone calls on their behalf. So, yeah, it was a strange confluence of looking back and looking forward, and at the same time not really having any idea what I was doing, you know, other than the Lord's put me here, and I need to try to be supportive, you know. And I wanted to be supportive because he was my friend, you know, and I wanted to get him through that experience in one piece. And and again, I'm amazed by God's grace, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Two guys who we're completely kind of fumbling around in the dark. And really the car for us was, that was the one place we felt comfortable and like we felt we had some measure of control, especially Dallas, you know.
Mm-hmm.
When he was in the garage, when he was working on the car, he was absolutely in his element, you know, and he was totally in control of that situation. And I was so impressed with what he did in that context.
Yeah, and I like how you really did set that up in the sense of it was something that he had done with his dad, and so you really identified that as something that he possibly could even show you a few things about, you know, and it could
he
be
showed me everything about it, you know.
Well, that's right, because you said you went to Jiffy Lube and agonized over whether or not you would find be able to pop the hood.
Okay, yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Well, it sounds like you learned a few things. Okay, so in between all of the cleaning out carburetors and everything else that you were doing, you really did have to do some hard things. And you talk at one point in the book about a letter that you had to write to Dallas. I can't remember if it was an actual letter or a text or an email, but basically, you had a lot of fear around him, you know, when he was out on his own. Like, what decisions is he going to make? When he was heading down into Ann Arbor, was he going to slip up? What was this going to look like? And you talked to him basically about this this ex-stripper that he knew was going to, you know, potentially spend some time with. And what about that letter was so hard to write? And what ultimately prompted you to say, this is something I need to step in and do?
Yeah, I think, you know, the answer to the second part is the Lord, yeah. You know, just nudging me to do that. But what was so hard about it was just, I'm not a confrontive guy by nature. You know, I'm an agreeable kind of guy. And I think at some level that makes you a great friend because people love to be around a person like that. But on the other hand, it makes it hard to do really the hard work of friendship or relationships, which sometimes means confronting. And, you know, it was tough for me to do that. That doesn't come natural to me. I'm not a guy who kind of seeks out conflict and confrontation. But, you know, as ill-equipped as I was, you know, again, the Lord walked me through that. And I hope Dallas felt loved by those things. You know, I think one of the things that he lacked growing up was anyone in his life who would do that for him, you know. And I think there were so many things that he didn't get to experience, like, you know, meals with the family around the dinner table and, you know, Christmases where people were getting him gifts. And some of these things we were able to give him, but I think we were also able to give him, you know, this is what it looks like when somebody, you know, loves you enough to say, please don't do that, you know. And I knew in our case that I was a man and he was a man, and that ultimately at the end of the day I was going to have to say, you know, the Lord who began a good work in Dallas's life is going to see it through to fruition. Regardless of what I do here, but also I think I have a responsibility to do something too.
Yeah, absolutely. And what do you think, you know, even just briefly here, what do you think by extension the relationship with your wife and your kids offered him in the sense of kind of that family environment?
Yeah, I think just that, you know, some stability. I think logistically, you know, it was just a place to get a great meal and be taken care of a little bit, you know? Mm-hmm. So it gave him that. I think, you know, being around the boys gave him a chance to see, you know, a family and a father-son relationship that, you know, was maybe a little bit healthier. But, yeah, hopefully just a kind, warm place where he could go through some tough things and not feel alone.
Sure. Now, we talk a lot, you know, whenever we talk about discipleship or mentorship, kind of what we're doing in the sense of pouring into other people's lives and what we're hoping to accomplish. But what would you say, Ted, looking back on this, what did this experience really do for you? How did it grow you?
Yeah, I think that could be summed up in the phrase, learning to more fully trust the Lord. Anybody who's ever been in any kind of relationship in life, whether it's a friendship or, you know, a dating relationship or a discipleship relationship, you know that it's not clean, it's not easy. Anytime you're dealing with expectations and emotions from people, it's risky, you know, and there's a lot of risk involved in that. And I think for people my age, you know, especially as we have our own kids and our own families and we get a little bit older, it's so easy to kind of close yourself off from anything risky, you know, because you feel like, oh, my plate's so full with family, I couldn't possibly, you know, take on this friendship or take on this or that. But, you know, for me, and again, growing up in the church, we always talk about trusting God and we pay a lot of lip service to that. But there were so many times through this and still that I have to tangibly trust the Lord with it, you know? Mm-hmm. And I think there's a difference between saying that and actually doing it and releasing some of those anxieties, casting some of those cares upon the Lord, because he does care for us. You know, that's a promise in Scripture that we can cling to. And we don't always know what that's going to look like. We don't know that, you know, everything's going to work out perfectly and he's going to get the job or the Christian wife or whatever, but we do know that we can cast our cares on the Lord because he does care for us.
Yeah, that's good. So you're talking right now, Ted, to a lot of young adults out here who, you know, maybe feel that it's something that, you know, again, we're talking to a lot of evangelicals who are in the churches, who are wearing the skinny jeans maybe, and maybe thinking, you know, what do I have to offer? I'm either too young, or I'm too busy, or I'm in college, or I'm broke, or whatever. What does this look like for them? Paint them the picture of how they could, you know, and when we talk about entry-level mentoring or discipleship, what can they actually do with what they have?
Yeah, a couple suggestions come to mind immediately. One is, you know, discipleship doesn't have to be the awkward thing that, you know, that you have to kind of decide to do. I think the Lord used an interest that I already had at the time, which was the car, as a way for Dallas and I to do this kind of naturally. You know, and we tend to think of, discipleship as the weird twice monthly coffee shop meeting, when in fact, you know, anytime it's ever worked in my life, it's been around something that I like already. You know, for me as an athlete growing up, it was sports, it was football, it was boxing. You know, some of these relationships that I met in my sports, that provided the context for the discipleship. So I think number one, you know, look at what your interests and affinities already are, and see how you can engage people within that. But also, I think very little of what I offered Dallas was outrageous or over the top. It had nothing to do with me being especially talented or equipped for it. I mean, a lot of times it was just answering the phone, you know, and being there to listen, being there to pray, being there to talk, just being there to hang out with. So again, we think of discipleship as something sometimes that other people do, like you have to be a youth pastor, like, you know, the associate pastor at your church to be able to really do it, when in fact, I kind of learned on the fly. And a lot of it was just being available, and we can be available for other people, and I think we can be poured out to a certain degree for other people. And in the midst of it, you're going to feel exhausted. You might feel a little bit tapped out, you know, but you can know that the Lord will walk with you through that.
Yeah, that's good. I know that you and your wife gave, I think you gave Dallas for Christmas, a French press coffee pot with some coffee, and that kind of became a little appendage for him. He really got into that. And but I know that there was somewhere near the end of the book where you talked about how you had this conversation with him about him maybe inking you a little bit. Did that actually happen, or what? How'd that transaction come about? Did that go down, or what?
You know what? It didn't go down.
No,
it didn't go down for a couple of reasons. One, it seemed a little bit too permanent for me.
Uh-huh.
And also, I felt like the tattoo was something that you shouldn't try to get for free. You should probably overpay for it, and you get what you pay for. So if and when I ever do that, I'm probably going to go in a different direction. But there are a lot of things, and guys will do this. And if you've been around guys much, you know that they, you know, Dallas and I were always kicking around ideas. You know, I was going to train him for the Golden Gloves, and I was going to do this and do that, and he was going to ink me up. And, you know, about an eighth of anything that any guy discusses ever comes to be. But, you know, the fact that we got the car to work and we got that one, you know, pushed through into reality, it feels pretty good.
That is pretty good. Yeah, I'm wondering if I were to get a tattoo, if I would get it from a guy who basically tattooed his own neck under the influence of alcohol or whatever.
You know what, that maybe isn't the resume that you're looking for out of your tattoo artist. You know, I think we
exactly.
can both safely say that.
Exactly. I want to go to a place where they're going to offer me a latte when I sit in there. You know, I just kind of can get a feel for it. There are some candles
Absolutely.
Burning. I'm just saying, you
Absolutely.
Know, maybe a few MDs that actually work there.
Yeah,
we'll see.
I couldn't agree more.
That's good. Well, this is, I mean, I didn't even get into the fact that this is really a fun book as well. You're very funny, Ted, in the way that you write, and just the way that this story unfolds is extremely encouraging, and I hope it will be for our audience. So I want everyone to know, again, that the title of the book is Dallas and the Spitfire. We're talking here to Ted Kluck. We'll be linking to the book on the blog, so you can check it out there. But Ted, I just want to thank you for just providing a great story. As we finish here, where is Dallas now? Give us a little update on your relationship and kind of what he's up to now and what you're up to.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, we've kind of lost touch, which is sad. But in a way, you know, he's self-sufficient now. He's working actually at the Lansing City Rescue Mission, which is where he got clean. So, you know, he's got so much talent. And if you've read the book, which you have, and I by the way, I appreciate the fact that you've read it. You know, your questions were great. But you know that he's a super talented guy, and the Lord gave him some real gifts for speaking and communicating. I thought his sections of the book were great that he wrote, and the writing of the book actually it created some tension between us. You know, not so much the writing, but the publishing. You know, I think seeing his life out there, which sounded like a good idea in the beginning, and when it came to reality, it was a little bit tougher for him. But I just want to say that he did an amazing job. I think, you know, his sections are the best ones in the book, and the Lord's using his gifts right now for him to minister to guys who, you know, were in the same spot he was in a couple years ago.
That's cool. And I think it's a great testimony in the sense, exactly what you said, that, you know, even if we want to sugarcoat it and say that we're saved and, oh, you know, all the platitudes, I just want to be a vessel of the Lord and I want to be whatever. I mean, to see your struggles and your failures in print is a difficult thing. And I think that's really cool that he was willing to tell his story and allow you to tell your part in it as part of that. So awesome. Well, thanks so much, Ted, for being part of this conversation.
Thank you guys for having me.